8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Knotfest.com presents Talk to Me. With over 300 interviews under his belt and 6 years running, your host Joshua Toomey interviews metal and rock's heaviest hitters. Follow the show at Talk to Me Talk. Here's your host, Joshua Toomey.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Talk to Me here on Knotfest.com. As always, I am Joshua Toomey, joined by the one, the only, Chris Aiken. Chris, how are we doing?
Awesome, man. What's happening?
Not a whole lot. This week on the show, we've got Isaac Lamb of Kubla Khan, lowest form of animal, out on April 1st. And make sure you guys are checking out, I believe it is Swan Song, out now with the song with Scott Vogel of Terror, who they will be going on tour with soon. They'll also be touring with Knocked Loose. And we get into a lot of good stuff with them, man. And, you know, it's kind of cool to get the drummer on every once in a while. You got to throw a drummer in because, you know, how many times we interview the singers, man. So, so sometimes you just got to throw a drummer in the mix.
Next thing I know, you're going to say that you got to interview the bass player every once in a while.
Well, you do have to interview the bass player every once in a while. But, it's kind of cool. He talked about kind of being the business behind the band, or being very involved in the business of the band. Okay. And something you and I talked about last week on the show was the snot versus snot, you know, rapper versus band type deal. And Kubla Khan actually went through this with another band called Kubla Khan that was out around in the 80s. And so I talked with Isaac a little bit about the, you know, the legalities of having to fight for your name and adding, because this is Kubla Khan TX, if you want to get, you know, official with it. But it's funny, he said that they own the rights to use Kubla Khan on like t-shirts, but the other guy owns the rights to use the name on, you know, flyers or so. It's very bizarre, all the different things that they have to kind of go through with something like this.
Now, why is the other guy fighting them exactly? Because they're stealing his trademark?
Stealing trademark. And, you know, I think even Isaac said something about, you know, they, just because he owns the trademark, and that was when Kubla Khan first kind of started popping up on Warped Tours and things like that. So he assumed that Kubla Khan might have some money behind him, which they don't. So, he's just, you know, if you have your trademarks, man, I guess you got to protect them.
You know what? For a band that didn't do dick in the 80s at all, I've never heard of them ever. And I was an 80s dork.
Right.
You know, never heard of Kubla Khan in the 80s. That dude should be happy to just give the trademark away for a credit on the next CD or whatever. I mean, stop it. Just stop. Your time is done. It's not the Rolling Stones. If there was a Rolling Stones today that came out, that's one thing. 40 years ago and you never had success, fuck you, give it up.
You haven't heard of Kubla Khan from the 80s or the 1580s or whenever Kubla Khan person was running around.
Yeah, neither one of those had any meaning to me, so stop it. Just let this band that's trying, let them do it. Stop being dicks. Jeez.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting kind of hearing his side. I don't know how much he's talked about it in the past, because he kind of got a little worked up about the subject. So I think it's definitely a fun talk. And then we also talk about, so I know you're not a TikTok guy, but Kate Beckinsale, the actress, a few weeks ago posted a TikTok of her and a friend of hers coloring, but they had Kubla Khan in the background. So the metal world internet blew up, like, oh my God. And I was joking with him about, you know, you can do all the press and all the photos and all the tours and everything else, but Kate Beckinsale posts a TikTok of her coloring with Kubla Khan in the background, and that's probably the most promotion they've ever gotten.
Now, here's the question. Who was listening to the Kubla Khan in the background, her or her kids?
I think it's more of a overlaying music.
But who put it there?
Well, I mean, I guess, I'm assuming it's her. You never, I mean, hell, she dated Pete Davidson, so maybe she's got some street cred.
Maybe. That's funny. And you say that I'm not a TikTok guy. I am not, but I'm starting to lean toward getting into TikTok a little bit, just because I'm finding out that all my murder porn, there's like a murder porn community TikTok, apparently. and I forget what I was watching. I was watching something like 2020 or something, and they were talking about the Menendez brothers from back in the 90s. And apparently there's a whole TikTok community trying to get them out of jail.
Oh, wow.
And that would be, I could see me watching that for days, just watching idiots saying, yeah, that they should have killed their mother. She was mean. You know, I could watch that all day long.
You're like my wife, who will not download TikTok, but she'll watch Instagram reels and Facebook moments or whatever they're called, stories, right, which are basically just TikTok videos downloaded and put on the other. I'm just, go to TikTok, man. It's great.
Dude,
I can solely waste 3 hours on TikTok and not even know it.
I got to tell you, I am that guy, but with YouTube shorts.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah.
I will watch YouTube. I'll just be sitting there. There's this one chick on here, Bibahan or something. I don't know if you've seen her. I think that's her name, Bibahan. And she's really smoking hot. And basically, it's just some guy reading like kind of dirty limericks to her and watching her get it. That's really all it is he'll read something and it's kind of double entendre dirty. And then you just sit there and watch her brain work until it clicks into her brain. And it's the dumbest shit.
Yeah.
I've watched 1,000 of them, and I'll be right. Oh yeah. Another one. You know, I can't stop watching them.
Yeah. I watch a lot of people falling. Those are always great. The ones that those are so funny too, because you'll look down, they'll have 40 million views of like somebody falling and hitting their head on a car or something.
Yeah.
You know, just all that stupid stuff.
Yeah. I can't seem to figure out the formula on how to get them to work. Like I put up a few, like of just me and Neely saying stupid shit.
Yeah.
And I dressed them all up real nice. They look real good and stuff, you know. 40 views. It's like, I suck.
Yeah. There's a few of these, of the interviews that I've done on TikTok, and TikTok is obviously not a place for a 2 or 3 minute interview. It's
right.
Like you want to be like, bam, 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 you know, maybe get a little click here and there, but yeah, it's definitely a place you can go and fall down a rabbit hole. And the one thing that I've always said about TikTok is, yes, it's social media, but it's probably the most creative of the social medias, because you got to edit and, you know, do all the green screens if you want to and things like that. So I think it's the most of the social media. I think it's the most creative and the most challenging.
But it can be, although I know at least on YouTube, it seems like every other one of the YouTube videos is these guys popping zits. So there's no creativity to that. Just,
yeah, hey,
here's another zit, pop, boom, yep, next. You know?
Which, you know, the wife will watch that stuff too. So it's really, really gross. I was going to say we could do some news this week, man, but there's not a lot going on.
Yeah,
it's the same, nothing. I do want to give, you know, condolences to the friends and family of one Taylor Hawkins. Never been the biggest Foo Fighters fan. I've always appreciated the Foo Fighters. I loved the documentary about the band. Definitely sat and watched all that. And then I watched all the Sound City stuff. Taylor just always kind of seemed like one of those just dudes you would want to be around. And obviously he was the life of the party until he wasn't at the end there. But, you know, always seemed like a good dude. And it's funny talking to people like, did you know he was in Alanis? And I was like, I remember him being in Alanis Morissette. And then there's the great story in the documentary about the band where, you know, they kick out the dude from Sunny Day Real Estate, and then they want a drummer, and, you know, Taylor calls Dave Grohl and says, you know, hey, I want to be in your band. And at the time, you know, Foo Fighters aren't that big. And he's like, you know, you're probably gonna have to take a pay cut. And Taylor's like, yeah, I know, but I want to be in a band. I don't want to be just another session guy.
Sure. Well, I met him one time. You know, I told this story on CMS. I'll tell it here. You know, when Alanis first came to town, the very first time she came to Cleveland with Jagged Little Pill, before Jagged Little Pill was even anything.
Yeah.
She came to a little tiny, tiny bar here in Cleveland. And, the magazine that I was writing for at the time asked me to go out and interview her. And I was like, sure. Okay. I'll go, you know, whatever, you know, for me, anything to get out of the house. I was like, fuck yeah, I'm there, you know?
Right.
And so I go and I get there, I don't know, 6 o'clock or whatever for what was the interview time. And I meet up with Alanis and she's like, do you drink? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, well, let's go have a drink, 'cause I'm not doing an interview without a drink or two. I was like, okay. So we sit at the bar, and then it ends up, first it was just me and her talking. Then it was me, her, Taylor, and some guy that I guess was like their only tech at the time.
Okay.
At the bar. And then the bass player came over. And before long, the crowd, like the room was half full of people because we sat at the bar for like 2 hours just drinking and, you know, shooting the shit. And then they came out and played. And I was like, wow, this band might be something someday. And they certainly were. But nice guy. I mean, he was certainly nice. He was funny. Told jokes. See, and again, I think, you know, to your point about, you know, the life of the party, I think the fact that not so much that everybody used their moment to get free press off of him on the, oh my God, Taylor Hawkins, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if you noticed this, but everybody had a picture with the guy, from bands that they would have toured with to really heavy bands to really, you know, old bands and light, you know, I think I saw a picture with what's his name? Tom Jones.
Oh, wow.
You know, I saw a picture of him and Tom Jones. I mean, it was like completely opposite of what they do, but seemed like he was, you know, very well respected, very well liked. I guess it's a bummer. You know, it's hard to feel sad when you do it to yourself, but you know, hey, the dude had a good run though. I mean,
no, he definitely did. And the one thing I was kind of, I wrote down some names. I was like, of the gambit of people that posted tributes, either posted tributes, posted a photo with them. You got Jill Biden, Paul McCartney, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Metallica, Elton John, Sheila E. Like the gambit of bands that he affected in one way or another. Huh? And, you know, the outpouring of love and everything else like that. And it's funny because I told my wife that if I'm on my deathbed and I'm literally about to die, post that I'm dying or that I'm dead. Go ahead and post that I'm dead because I want to read all these fucking,
right? Nice,
you know, like, oh my God, Toomey was so great. I'm going to miss him so much. And then, you know, then I want to croak, but, you know, give me about, you know, 6 hours of like, oh man, Toomey's dead. I can't believe it. Dude, my luck gonna be a bunch of good, that motherfucker's dead.
Or people that think you're somebody else. That could, yeah, that guy, he never gave me any money when he won the lotto, prick. Yeah, like, wait, right?
That piece of shit. Yeah. But yeah, so unless you were posting about either everyone posted about them and then the next day every band that played a show that night played My Hero or what's the other song? Everlong. Yeah.
That was I hate the death that these deaths have become trendy. I hate that, but you know, I mean, it's respect, I guess. It's respect from the bands. And I mean, dude, you've been in a band. It ain't that easy to learn a song in an hour and then get out there and play it
right
in front. And I mean, how much time did they have to rehearse these tunes?
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, probably an hour.
Yeah. Some of those are just riffs that you kind of just jam on anyway. Like, sure. Especially like Everlong or something like that. It's funny. You're like, oh great. Yeah. I really need to see Candlebox's version of Everlong. You're like, thanks, man. Speaking of that, they've been posting a footage of Puddle of Mud's War Pigs. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's exactly what I need in my life.
No, I don't need that. I barely need Blurry in my life, let alone them doing anything else.
But yeah. And then, if, you know, the couple of things on the Chris Rock thing, it's obviously a little bit overblown to this point. I mean, it's every other thing on Facebook right now is, like we said, either Taylor Hawkins or Chris Rock.
Right.
I definitely can't tell if it's a work or not. It does look very suspicious in some ways. But then other people debunk that theory too, with all of the other things that are said. But I just don't think that we need to be setting a precedent for you being able to go up on stage and slap the comedian for making fun of anything.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, dude should have got cuffed. Yeah. Honestly. I mean, or maybe not cuffed. I mean, it's a slap for God's sakes. I mean, a good stern warning and a $600 fine is what he should have got. But, you know, the thing that's cracking me up is, I don't know if you saw this today, but the old dude from Twisted Sister.
Yeah.
Did you see him saying about
JJ French?
Yeah. He's out there saying nobody should say anything about anybody's appearance if they're a comedian. It's like, shut up. Do you not understand what comedy is?
Right.
two things drive me crazy. One, do you not understand that comedy is a perversion of the reality? That's all comedy is. It's how far you can take it, how far you can pervert it so that it makes people think about it and get the joke. You know,
yeah.
Clearly a G.I. Jane joke, that's hardly the most harsh joke you're ever going to hear.
Right.
So it wasn't that big of a deal. And for him to start saying, well, comedians need to be censored. Shut the fuck up, dude. You know, and that's the other part. This is the guy that his band went to Congress about censorship.
Right.
It was that band. It was Twisted Sister that went to Congress or the Senate or wherever it was that they went back in the 80s about censorship. And now this guy's advocating for censorship. Dude, just stop. You didn't get the joke. Okay, move on. Look, I can't stand Paul Stanley, but he made the most valid point of them all. He's like, that's just fucking weak, getting up and slapping somebody over it. You know, it's weak. The whole thing is weak. I do think it's a sham, though. I know people are saying that it's not, but the Oscars, if you look at any story prior to when was it? Sunday, Monday, whatever day.
I think it was Sunday, yeah.
Whatever day it was, any article about the Oscars did nothing but talk about how it's had less and less viewership every year for the past 10 years. Well, now they got viewership. It didn't happen at the end of the show either. It happened right at the beginning so that people would flip over and say, oh, let's see if something else is going on over there. You know,
there's one face Chris Rock makes because there's that copy that we get from like Australia or whatever of like, you know, keep my wife's name out your fucking mouth or whatever. When Will is yelling at Chris Rock and Chris starts to say something and it looks like he's about to bury Will Smith. And then he like bites his lip and then he moves on with his the next award or whatever. I'm like, you know, I wish Chris Rock would have said whatever he was about to say, cause I know he was just about to bury Will Smith.
What would you have done if it was you? Would you have taken the slap and moved on, or would you have jumped his ass?
I think that I would have retaliated just being in the moment, but for him to be so composed is so weird. Yeah. Like, you know, Will Smith, and that's like a good, you know, 7-8 second walk from the seat to the thing. I mean, there's, you know, at what point do you go, I'm going to slap instead of punch or push or whatever, you know, there's a lot going on there. Yeah. So, it's just such a mess.
I thought about it from if that dude was coming at me, I know I'd have been like, bitch, you better be ready to go. You know, I would have been yelling at him on his way up to me. Right. I just know that I'd have been like, bitch, you better be ready. Cause I'm going to fuck you up. You better go sit back down with your bald headed wife. Fuck you.
Well, that's the thing too, is like, you know, Demi Moore and G.I. Jane, like, she was pretty, you know, pretty hot in that movie. You know? Like, so it's not necessarily like a super insult. It's not like he called her Mask or Casper or anything like that. Yeah,
it was a soft, soft joke. It's not like he said, hey, are you still dying there, cancer head? You know, I mean, he didn't go that route at all. He did a very soft, only famous, I mean, there's two jokes you can go for, the Sinead O'Connor joke or the G.I. Jane joke. What else are you going to do? You got one bald chick in the front row. Of course you're going to make a joke about it, especially when it's so soft like that. I mean, come on. What do you think Chris Rock is up there to do? Be serious.
Put it out there now, though. Anybody makes jokes about my wife, I'm going to slap the shit out of them.
There you go. When those alleged dates of yours that may or may not happen, they better be no jokes about your wife, right?
Right. A little bit on, before we get into the interview, a little bit on the new singer in Skid Row, Eric, was it
Gronwall?
Gronwall. Eric Gronwall.
That rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
Yeah. He needs a stage name worse than anybody.
Yeah, no kidding.
Eric Mozart over there. The one thing I have to say, man, I mean, I know it's not Skid Row to me. You know, I love Sebastian Bach era Skid Row.
Sure.
I haven't really been too much into the other eras of the band as much as, you know, you say you like some of the stuff. Mm-hmm. But man, and it took a couple of days for me to hear the new song, The Gangs All Here or whatnot.
Yeah.
But man, I'm thoroughly impressed and like kind of, I would kind of go see Skid Row now, I think, if they came through.
It sounds good. I mean, if you like Skid Row, you're going to like it, I think. You know, I'll tell you what, if I'm learning anything, don't say anything negative about Eric Grönwall online. Holy shit, are the Swedish Eric Grönwall / Heat people out in abundance to take care of this guy. Dude, I was on Facebook, a friend of mine that's a publicist friend that works all of those bands from Sweden and Switzerland and whatnot, yeah. Those melodic rock bands, which that's where Grönwall comes from, that band Heat.
Right.
And he posted some glowing thing about Eric Grönwall, and of course he's friendly with the guy. And I watched the videos of the Vegas show that he did, and they were good. And I just kind of said, you know, this looks pretty good, but this dude needs to eat a sandwich or something. He's he's really skinny.
Oh yeah, he's a little dude.
You know, and I know the reason he's coming off of chemo. He just did like 5 months of chemo for leukemia or some shit. So he lost some weight and, you know, and he is skinny, but again, going back to the same thing with like the whole Chris Rock thing, it was an obvious joke.
Right.
It wasn't that harsh of a joke. It really was just hey man, gain a couple pounds. And it was more to the thought of he needs to gain a couple of pounds because Skid Row's got like dates all the way through the year. They have like legitimate touring scheduled. I'm like, this little scrawny guy is going to get fucking beat up. You know, dude, you've toured. You do get beat up, you know, from sleeping in shitty bunks and up and down and in buses and, you know, sleeping in chairs when you're tired because you didn't sleep on the bus the night before and all that other shit. You do get beat up on a longer tour. You know, I made this just innocuous joke. God damn if I didn't get 50 people. You don't know shit, motherfucker. You're just being an asshole. Why are you picking on the guy? He sounded great. I'm like, I didn't say it didn't sound great. Relax, you fucking morons. Everybody's going crazy to protect this guy. It's like, okay, there's a new guy in Skid Row. It's not like Mick Jagger's been replaced here, okay? It's Skid Row.
If I ever posted a photo and the biggest complaint is I'm too skinny, I'll take that. God forbid.
You know, I mean, I don't know. Did you watch the live footage of the guy?
I haven't watched any of the live footage, no.
He's a little too hyped.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's real hyped up. And I think that'll probably work itself. That's been the big complaint I've seen online has been that people are like, man, this guy, his stage presence is terrible. And it's because he's way hyper. He's running around. He's, you know, leaning into the crowd and banging his head a little too hard and this and that. And I'm thinking, all right, the guy's been, he's literally been with the band 4 days. He met the guys like Monday and played his first gig Friday. So, you know, he's first time he's coming, no offense to the band Heat, but Heat is not Skid Row as far as name recognition. And they're opening for Scorpions to a sold out, whatever room. So, you know, they're playing, I think it's Scorpions, but they're playing bigger shows. And this is his first run. Of course, he's a little excited. Show me video next week.
Right.
Once he's calmed down a little bit and then we'll judge.
Yeah. I mean, that's even the same thing they did with Homeboy from Journey. I mean, that's one thing they said, you know, he was so hyped up for that first show. He was just running up and down the stage and back and forth and didn't know what to do with himself just because he was so excited to front one of his favorite bands. And, you know, Eric Grönwall has, you know, done the Skid Row stuff in the past.
Sure.
And so, I mean, to get on stage with Skid Row, especially after only, it says they made their live debut on the 26th of March. So that means he met them on the 22nd of March. Like, you know, there's been like two Talk To Me's since then.
You know? Right. Yeah. I mean, that's like crazy, crazy short amount of time. No rehearsal time. They probably rehearsed 2 days.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it. You know, so I think they'll be fine for what they are. You know, I mean, obviously, if they're not getting, it's pretty clear they're not getting back with Sebastian Bach ever. Because if they were, this was the moment.
Yeah.
This was the last moment it's going to matter. You know, if they switch out from Grönwall to God knows who else is left. But, you know, if they switch out from him, it's just done, but this guy seems like he could do it. Like you said, I like the stuff. I like the Solinger stuff. I saw ZP Thart. He was okay. I saw Solinger. He was okay. You know, Tony Harnell can sing. I didn't see him with Skid Row, but I have no doubt that those shows were fine because Tony Harnell can sing as well as anybody. And this guy seems like he could sing, so whatever. You know, dude, at this point, the argument about the original members, does it really matter anymore? As long as it sounds good, who cares?
You know, sometimes the band has to get back together and sometimes the singer is just not available. You know, sometimes that has to happen.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, let them both be out there touring. Then I got two choices. I can choose which version of Skid Row I want to hear. The one that calls itself Skid Row or the one that isn't, but probably should be. You know, and then you make your choice, you know.
And it's funny, one of the taglines to Talk To Me used to be from hardcore to hair metal. So now we're about to go from hair metal to hardcore.
All right.
So let's check out my interview with Isaac Lamb of Kubla Khan. And make sure you guys are checking out the new album, Lowest Form of Animal, out April 1st. And then Chris and I will be back with you momentarily.
To all the ladies working in Iowa, hey, selling pussy to the chrome on the interstate, living hard lives, working long nights, and by every man you ever loved, till your heart dies. You're my mother, you're my sister, and a donut tonight, for every bruise, and excuse me, time that you couldn't hide, for all the fear, every tear, slowly burning your side, for every moment in the light, I'll fucking see you tonight, goddamn.
All right, guys, let's welcome Isaac Lamb of Kubla Khan to Talk To Me here, notfest.com. Isaac, how are we doing tonight?
Doing great. How about yourself?
Doing well, man. Doing well. I have been on a huge Kubla Khan kick for the last few days, and just watching the live videos, I have to go see this now.
Yeah, it's a fun time. Usually at our shows, it's, you know, we're pretty straight to the point band, so nothing hard to grasp from us.
Right. A lot of meat and potatoes, man.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and I was going to jump into that a little bit, but, you know, when it comes down to like writing drums for this style, I mean, there's not a lot of beats that you're going to go to, man. So how do you keep it fresh for you?
It does get kind of hard. I feel like, though, the sort of the drums in our band and just sort of this style is not the focal point. And so, you know, I try and leave a lot of room for, we're really a vocal driven band. That's the highlight. That's what everybody wants to listen to.
Right.
So I try and keep it simple. And then, you know, I've got my spots where I can play out and, you know, add a little more here and there. But for the most part, I really do try and keep it simple, just sort of like a rock drum approach, maybe a little pop approach too. It does get a little, I know what you mean though. There's only so many things I can do in that category, but.
Yeah, it seems like they come to you with a riff and you're like, oh, here we go again. We got the fast punk beat. No, now we're going to break it down into a breakdown. You know,
when they come to me with the riff, they already know what I'm going to play it by that point. So
they have the language to you. You know, you're like, you got to go to the NoFX beat and then we go to the blah, blah, blah. You know, like,
yeah.
Like that type of stuff, man.
We've got that good dialogue by this point.
A lot of oom-pat, oom-pat, you know, all mm-hmm. that stuff. Yeah. And we need two of the ooms and less of the apps. And,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's talking to a drummer as a musician is one of the more underrated things in life.
Oh, I love it. I love talking to other drummers about drum tones.
Yeah.
Because you get some funny like dialogue. Like when you're like, the snare, I want it to be a little more like pop and less like crack, you know, like such minute differences, but every drummer knows exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's like when I hit the tom, it's like, wow, I want more of a wham, you know?
Yeah, man.
Yeah. You know, actually listening to a lot of hardcore and stuff over the years, man, the one thing that I've been waiting for to come back is the piccolo snare, man. I need some hardcore piccolo snare back.
I love that. I feel like that sort of cemented its spot in the genre in like grindcore, like the little 13-inch like popcorn snares. I think that's it's so trendy to just do the bigger, the better, you know, 8-inch deep snares, 9-inch, if you can get it, like that's sort of the go-to for, our genre. This last EP though, I just recorded on, I think it was only 3.5 deep. it was pretty close to a Bigelow snare. There maybe four deep, but yeah, it was pretty shallow. So I'm getting there.
Yeah, you can never go wrong with those old snap case records, man. Those.
Oh yeah,
he was a monster. Let's talk a little bit about lowest form of animal out April 1st, man. You know, how tough was it to come up with stuff? You know, easy? Is it hard for you guys? You know, does it just come out of you?
It's some of all that. We get together in the studio and just start jamming. You know, Nolan always brings a handful of riffs. I think before we got there, he sent us an email with 100 riffs in it that we could all filter through, but we don't actually start writing until we get to the studio. And yeah, some of the songs just come together right away. You know, some of them take an hour, other ones take 3 or 4 days just to put the skeleton together. Yeah, it gets a little tough. Yeah, sorry about him.
What's the dog's name?
This is Sumo.
Sumo.
Yeah, he's my lap dog.
Nice.
Some of the songs get tough, but we've got a good situation by this point. We all four get along together. And then when you add Randy, our producer, to the mix, he's really good at sort of helping fill those spots that we don't have it all together. You know, if we get stuck, he's real easy to diffuse us when we get a little, you know, testy and stuff. So it usually works out pretty good.
It's just like throwing another breakdown.
Yeah. That's always the answer, right?
Right. As we started here, you talked about, you know, you've been doing a lot of interviews lately. The one thing that was actually hard was to find interviews with you. Are you doing interviews? Is that new or just not a lot out there or what?
I mean, usually it's Matt. Matt's he's the guy that people want to talk to. He's the face, the voice of the band. So usually he just does them all, but I don't know. Lately they've been coming my way and I've been doing them, happy to do them. So I handle a lot of the business of the band. I'm a big part of the writing process and sort of the tour, you know, mom. So I've got all the answers. So
there we go, man. Well, I did want to kind of take this, you know, to you. So next time somebody's looking for some things to talk about with you, you know, there's a little bit more out there because, you know, simply you'll go and find an interview and hear what they have to say and what they, you know, what their interests are and stuff, man. So let's kind of get into you a little bit. First off, congratulations on the marriage. I did see
Thank you.
You know, doing a little bit more research, looked like that was a long time coming. So looked like you had to postpone it here and there.
It was a COVID thing where, you know, we had it all planned and had to push it back and then had to push it back and finally made it happen, which was really nice right at the height of the Omicron stuff. So, but we got through it, no problem. So, and yeah, it was great. Had a really good time. A lot of people came out and we did it in LA, which neither of us live there currently. So she's got a lot of family out there though. So yeah, it was awesome. A lot of fun.
Nice, man. Yeah, it's always good. Get into, you know, what was the catalyst to kind of get you to pick up drums?
I think it's just sort of always been there. My grandma, who I'm really, really close with, she is she was a music teacher. She did a lot of choir, a lot of children's choirs and stuff like that. And just growing up in church, she always had a children's choir. And I was way, way too shy and embarrassed and horrified to sing. So she would put me in the back with a cowbell or a woodblock to keep time. And I feel like it stuck from there. Like I always had, you know, a good internal clock. It always came really easy to me. And then, so she would do like some drum camps in the summer with the professor from our local college. And so I met him when I was real young and I just was always fascinated. He would bring all the world drums and, just always fascinated. And then, you know, a few years later, my brother plays guitar and of course he's older and I want to hang out with him and his friends.
Right.
So I'm always sitting around watching them play music, but they didn't have a drummer. So they were like, why don't you just learn drums? You're here. There's a drum kit here. And I was like, yeah, all right. I could probably pick that up pretty easy and just started, loved it. Haven't stopped.
What were they playing at the time? Cover songs?
I think, yeah, like probably just like Blink 182 songs and like Offspring and like
nice.
trying to write their own versions of that. But it's, you know, we were middle school, maybe even before that, really, really young. So yeah. Yeah. I just sort of fell into it from there.
So when you start actually getting into drums for yourself, I mean, who are the guys you're looking at? Obviously Travis Barker is a monster of a drummer, yeah. So you can't go wrong there.
I feel like the first records I can remember like jamming along to learn were old Pantera records and System of a Down. Those were two that I just loved, like System of a Down, because it's just, there's a lot of weird stuff he's doing on drums, which is fun to learn, but it's always real high energy, which always like got me, you know. And like early Slipknot was one that I just, you know, would put on and try my best to play along.
Right.
A big one I watched, was Mike Portnoy of Dream Theater. Yeah. He's one of the first guys that I was like, oh dang, like he's got a big kit. Like there's a lot you can do here. Cause before that, you know, it's all pretty bare bones kits.
Right.
His was the first that I was like, oh, there's so much to drums. Like, so yeah, that was a fun. And he's not like nothing, you know, crazy compared to some guys now, but at the time it was so new from what I was listening to. There was just a lot of new stuff he was doing. So yeah, that was another big one for me.
So next album, you're going to go in and be like, actually guys, I want a 30-minute drum solo.
Oh, I would love like a big long drum break. Like give me like 3 minutes at the end of a song, make it a whole track. I don't care. Just let me just like make something, maybe draw some people in, and then like, we'll start a song. Like, I think that would be awesome. And I've tried, you know, we've tried a little bit of that. Like there's some cool stuff I did on Absolute right before the ninth track. There's like a cool little beat that I made that made it in, which I'm really happy about. So yeah, always happy for drum breaks. Plus being like a mosh band, I feel like there's nothing moshier than when it's just drums. Like everybody, because they know something big's coming and it's just so high energy. Yeah, always a big fan of that.
And obviously being from Texas, you have to be a Pantera fan. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You can't not, man.
You know, the one thing I remember about my days of touring was when you would get to Texas, you would be in Texas for like a month. I felt like, you could literally play an entire month's worth of shows in all these little podunk towns in Texas and draw a great crowd. And they would,
Even still, we're from Texas, so it's fair, but our best shows are always Texas. Every band we tour with says that, you know, everybody has great shows in Texas and just sort of loves it from what I gather, which is, you know, feels good to be a band from Texas, and everyone around the country sort of has this like mutual respect for the music there.
You said something a minute ago about being a little bit in the business side of the band. And obviously something that happened with you guys was the name having to add the TX to it. You know, something that just came up, I don't know if you saw it or not, but Mikey from Snot is upset with a rapper named Snot that is going on tour with Limp Bizkit.
Yeah,
and he said, he, and his big complaint was, I had heard about this rapper named Snot, but he was in his own lane. But now Limp Bizkit is taking this Snot out.
It's too close to Snot.
And it's like, he's like, now you're in my world. Yeah. And Limp Bizkit and the old Snot toured together back in the day.
Yeah.
And it was funny because I was reading some of the comments from the other Kublai Khan, like a wife or something, had said some things. And the thing that kind of came down to the whole deal is it's not who makes better music, who you know, if you make a better name or a better album, you don't get the name, you know?
Agreed.
So kind of talk a little bit about that. I don't know if there's legal or anything you can't really talk about, but just kind of the having to add the TX and all that stuff.
Just sort of, you know, by the time we realized that there was another band with the name, it was, you know, we were already deep in our career.
Right.
And so it was just sort of a quiet conversation of, if it comes up, like, we'll probably change the name. We're not going to like fight super hard because, you know, it was theirs first. If they're not an active band and don't care, like, I don't know, then it'll just be a thing that never gets talked about, which is best case scenario. But we announced Warped Tour and he came at us with a cease and desist and tried to sue us for a boatload of money that we, you know, don't have. Right. And it was this whole thing. And we immediately came back with like, yeah, like let's squash this. We'll figure something out. And he was just fighting for money. And so, you know, which he has no right to. And it gets kind of weird because he has legal rights to the music for album branding, but we had it for touring and touring merchandise and a few other things. So it was a very gray line where we can legally keep the name for certain things, but not everything. And I just, this is the easiest solution for us to, you know, I don't want to change our name completely, because that gets real confusing for a lot of people. And we were already, this is already our, all our socials. So it was just sort of an easy way to resolve the problem on our end. I don't think he's too happy about it. I think he's still a little pissed that all we did is, you know, add our state initials, but it is what it is. Yeah, I actually didn't even know about that snot thing, because I saw them on the flyer and I was like, I don't know what this means. Like, see, I know that they're not around. There's somebody important in the band who's not there anymore.
Right.
But yeah, that's,
well, that's the thing. I argued this on one of my recent episodes with my co-host, was I was like, it's just market confusion. If Earth Crisis took out the Kublai Khan from Minnesota or wherever they were from, you know, that's market confusion.
Yeah. You know, well, that's sort of the thing, is like, they're not an active band. They put out one EP with like five songs, did like a tour, and that was it. That's all they did. And then in the midst of this lawsuit, they started booking shows, I think to claim active status, possibly, don't know, but it's not valid because they started a lawsuit before they were active. And so that's why I'm not sweating it super hard, is they're not an active band. They're
right.
They're all like guys who, this is a thing from 30, 40 years ago that, I don't know. It's resolved the best way that I think it can be.
Right.
But.
And it's funny talking to my co-host, I was joking, because I started this podcast, Toomey is my last name. Talk Toomey is obviously a play on words or whatever. So I didn't even think about it. I went for about a year, and then I was like, you know what? I should probably Google this. And there's a speech pathologist that had put out some, speech therapy stuff under the name Talk Toomey about a year before I started. So random. just like
bad timing.
You know, like, you just didn't even think about it. But yeah. And they've never reached out to me. I get tagged in some of their stuff. I'm sure they get tagged in my stuff, but well, it's just funny to see.
It's hard, because obviously not everything's taken, but there's
taken.
So many people in the world, and everybody is trying to brand themselves. That's just how modern culture is. And so, yeah, like there's a lot that you have to be careful about with stuff like that.
Yeah. And that's the thing with adding the TX and even with the snot versus snot thing, you know, the newer snot is $NOT. So does that sign throw it off enough to where, you know, because it's how much further away from just adding your state to your name is adding a $ to your thing.
Yeah.
So it's gotta be a crazy world trying to get around all this copyright and trademark and stuff.
Yeah. I don't know.
But I did say that I was going to come out and be $Lipknot. So I could be just Slipknot.
I think you'd get in a lot of trouble for that one. You'd get attacked real fast.
But yeah, thanks for kind of talking a little bit about that, because you got some firsthand knowledge behind all that.
Yeah.
But like, you know, every band right now is either got missing letters or a V for an A, you know, like any of all that stuff. And it's so crazy trying to come up with a new band name that's not, you know, not a phrase or something.
Yeah, I know. But then like all these bands that are just like a one, you know, nouns, like,
right.
I don't know if for everything you're, you know, to, for your branding sake, like if I just Google that word, I'm not going to find your band.
Right.
I have to Google that word and then band. And so that also is a weird area where from a branding sake, I feel like it's bad, but I don't know. We didn't pick a good one either. There's a, you know.
Well, it's funny too, because I mean, obviously, you know, Kublai Khan was a person. So it's also like that. How do you own someone's name that, you know, was once a conqueror or whatnot from back in the day? So
yeah,
so crazy, man. We'll get onto the music a little bit, man. I was watching the video for Swan Song. Obviously, crazy, like the fact that the lyrics are on there for that song, so you're reading along with it, and you're just like, Jesus Christ, man. Like, you know, I was, you put it on and you're like, you know, listen to some tunes or whatever. And you're like, wow, this is a tough listen, you know, when they're talking about.
Yeah.
How, How involved in the lyrics are you? Are you as our order when Matt comes to the table with stuff? Are you like, Jesus? Like,
no, it's that's entirely Matt. He does everything, and then Eric does a lot of help in the studio, sort of just like if he's stuck replacing a word or whatever, he's always there to help him with phrasing and stuff. But yeah, Nolan and I don't help with lyrics. We don't hear it till it's basically finished. So yeah, we get a nice first listen, and it's always a fun surprise because Matt always pulls something wacky out, something wild. And yeah, so that song, especially even that first line, when he comes in, you're just like, oh geez, like, can you say that too loud? Like, I don't, but yeah, it's all Matt. It's just Matt. That's how he is. That's how he wants to address, you know, vocals in our band. And it's awesome. It's wonderful to have him as a front man, honestly.
Yeah, he seems great, man. He looks so cool in that video in the cemetery when he's walking in the black suit with the beanie and the sunglasses on. I'm like, God, it just looks awesome.
Yeah. No, that one came out pretty nice. We shot that while we were on tour. It was like a hell of a 2 days because, you know, it's an overnight drive to a 7 a.m. video shoot, like all day. And then the next day is Every Time I Die, the Christmas show.
All right.
So yeah, we're just nonstop for like 3 days straight and no sleep. And yeah, like trying to, you know, look your best and feel your best and be in a good mood so you do a good job. And yeah, I'm glad that one worked out all right.
Setting up in a church between some church pews, was that a, you know, was that, how was that for you?
It was, it feels kind of, it's interesting because it feels kind of bad. I mean, we're like in there just screaming cuss words and, you know, profanity inside this church that we had rented. And, but yeah, it was fun. It was a cool room, and I found a little nook for my drums. I had to drop a cymbal just to make it fit for the video, but yeah, it was kind of cool. It was a quick little deal. But
how does one find a church to rent, and do they have to okay the song or anything like that? Or?
I don't think they had any clue what we were using it for. I it was all our video guy. He set it all up, and I couldn't tell you that part, but I guarantee he didn't brief them with the song ahead of time, because I don't think it would have made it into the church. That song in particular, but
yeah, I mean, I guess it's not really, it's not a negative song though. So I mean, but
the language is not church appropriate language. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, you know, we're not a negative band,
right?
Matt speaks to a lot of political and social issues, but they're always in an aggressive, positive light, I suppose. But yeah, it's more just the actual language. I would say is a problem.
Back to some live show stuff. You've got basically the best seat in the house, and obviously watching the live videos and stuff like that. I mean, the crowd's always doing some pretty amazing things. So, I mean, from your vantage point, I mean, what's some of the crazier stuff you've seen?
Oh, just like, I mean, I think all four of us love it, but like anytime there's like a floor show or anything with the low stage, everybody on stage is welcome. I love when there's just people all the way around me standing, watching. It is always crazy, man. You just, sometimes you see people stage dive and you know, it hurt,
right?
Especially like venues where there's pillars, like kids are getting hurt all the time. You see them just swinging and you see them break their wrists and their hands, and always fights, which turn into, you know, giant fights. We've played some shows back in Texas early on and had some, you know, like 30 people brawls that ended the show. It's always exciting. Like, you know, obviously you don't want kids to fight, but it's exciting. You know, that's what they come to our shows for. I don't know, but.
So how much does it bum you out that you guys can run ads in a magazine and put videos on YouTube and do all the interviews in the world, but Kate Beckinsale throws you guys on a TikTok video and the world blows up?
That's the most press we've ever gotten as a band is that video. It's just a weird situation. The way that like our current media and culture is working is strange. It's really difficult because it moves so fast and attention spans are getting shorter. So you can't put something out and plan on it actually working, you know, like,
right.
Even like the Lorna Shore thing, they had a similar, you know, they put out that album and had their stuff on TikTok, just blew them through the roof, you know, just because of the sort of the way it was swallowed by the community. And like, it's great, but man, I can't keep up. We're old school guys. We're really not social media guys. So it's really hard to deal with that. I mean, all you can do with that is just say, man, that was cool. Like, share it and then go on with our career playing little clubs that leak from the ceiling. You know, I don't know.
When did you start getting wind that happened? Texting you and things like
probably
that?
Probably pretty immediately. Yeah. Cause like, as soon as it happened, you know, we've got hundreds of people just sharing it, sending us texts and stuff. Like, did you see this? I'm like, yeah, like from a lot of people. I was just confused because I was like, why? Like, I don't understand why this is happening, but I don't know. It's cool. It's a cool thing. Just that's how things work now, I guess. I don't know. Always
exciting. Well, I mean, it worked at a perfect time because, I mean, obviously you're promoting the new album.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You can't ask for anything better than that.
Yeah.
But, well, like we said, the newest album, Lowest Form of Animal, out April 1st. You got a tour with Knock Loose. Mm-hmm. That's going to be an amazing tour right there. Oh, yeah. Starting in a couple of days, so you're getting ready for tour as we speak, I assume.
Oh, yeah. Just the last... We had a van and trailer meltdown last tour. We started the tour in a van and trailer and ended with nothing. We had to leave our van in Flagstaff, Arizona, and leave our trailer in New Jersey.
Oh, wow.
So I got a new van and trailer, and I've spent the last bit getting it all ready, just cleaning everything up and getting it livable for, you know, 2 months on the road. So,
are you pulling seats out and making, you know, bumps type of stuff?
I'm like the caretaker. So, and a handyman. So yeah, I've just, you know, installing power everywhere it needs to be and building some bunks in the back so that we can all sleep comfy, and cause it's our home. You know, it's our home for half the year. So I just want it to be as comfortable, as accommodating as it can be. It's a pretty big rig compared to what we've had in the past, but yeah, it's going to be nice. So I'm really excited about it. And that tour goes straight into a few weeks with Terror and Sang with Sugabog. So yeah, it's going to be a long, but great couple months.
Yeah, I was looking at the dates. Looks like you end in like New York on the 8th, and you have to be somewhere like across the country on the 9th.
Yeah, I think we're not playing those first two shows. There was a little bit of a miscommunication with the flyer, but okay. We're not playing those first two shows. So we meet up with them in Louisville, Kentucky, and then stay with them all the way till Dallas, I think. So we end on a So Wet Fest in Dallas.
Awesome, man. Well, good luck out there, Isaac, man. Thanks for taking some time with me tonight here, Talk To Me Podcast, notfest.com. And everybody, guys, go check out Lowest Form of Animal out April 1st.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye.
All right, guys, a huge thank you once again to Isaac Lamb of Kublai Khan TX, or Kublai Khan as we call them, for coming on the show. And again, just make sure you're checking out Lowest Form of Animal out April 1st. And Chris, man, there was no top five, no Mount Rushmore. So let's just dive right into our, I keep calling them picks of the week. They're more of like suggestions or what have you been watching lately? Right. So what's something you've been watching lately?
Oh boy, I've been down the rabbit hole on 2020, and this just tells you how boring my life is. My life is 2020. So boring. I think I've watched 30 episodes of 2020 this week. I don't know how I got into it, but that show is just so well done as far as the, you know, the whole kind of documentary thing goes. So I've been watching that and then watching. Actually, I do know how I got into it, and I blame you when I'm thinking about it, because you, and it kind of went backwards, you got me into watching Inventing Anna.
Okay.
And I watched that whole Inventing Anna. Then I wanted to know more about her, so I Googled her and found that there was an episode of 2020 on her called The Sinilator or something, or Sin something. Sin Influencer, or Sinfluencer is what it's called.
Oh, that's a good name.
And it was about her, and they did interviews with her. And I just love hearing that accent. I don't know what that shit is, but I love it. And that's the one thing, man.
People are either in or out on that accent. Like, I watched an episode, I just couldn't handle the accent. And have you seen what's her name? Who played Anna?
Julia Garner.
Have you seen her explain the origin of that? It's so fun to watch. And then she said, you know, she went and sat down with Anna, and she's like, "How are you playing me?" And she's like, she sat there for a second, then just started mocking her, basically, or, you know, mimicking her back to her.
Yeah, but she does it great.
Yeah.
I mean, that was part of why I wanted to watch it, was to see how close the accent was, because it is an odd accent. And she did it masterfully when you hear the real Anna. And then watching this documentary thing, this 2020 on the real Anna, I was just like blown away by it. Kind of, I was like, wow, this is really strong. So then I just let it go. And next thing I know, 3 led to 5 led to 10. So then I'm watching that. And then I'm picking apart those. Like, one of them that I watched was this one on the Chippendales.
Okay.
And I have no, obviously, I have no interest in the Chippendales. You know, it's not my deal. You know, it could be for some people. It ain't for me. Little did I know that this Chippendales thing, it reads like a mafia screenplay. They have murders in it and poisonings and shootings and people stealing money and people making side illegal deals on flying to other countries to escape extradition and shit. I was like, this is a strip club thing. How did this get to be so big crimed? But so I ended up watching this one on that. And then that led me to ID Discovery to watch a 4-part thing on the Curse of the Chippendales. So I've been all over the map, but kind of it all stems from 2020 this week. It's the joy of being home, I guess.
Oh man. Yeah. That's definitely you. I mean, you can easily fall down those rabbit holes, especially something like that. They do. I mean, like you said, they do a really good job over there at the 2020.
Yeah.
This is some good takes from the, you know, the late 90s or whatever that we're talking. Right. But I, you know, as funny as I do, like, this 2020 is like, they used to come on, I think, like right after like TGI Friday.
Right.
And so it would be like the 4 comedies and then 2020. Yeah. So it kind of roll right into that. And being a kid, you know, you just got done watching, like, you know, Full House and Family Matters. And the next thing you know, you're learning about an abduction of a kid or a murder or something.
Exactly. You go from the happy household to this man killed his wife and kids. But did he really? You know, it's like, holy shit. What a transition.
Did you have any music this week, or is that it? Or
you just you know what? I did have a music take.
Okay, go ahead.
I had not listened to them, even though I listened to your interview with them from, I don't know, a year ago, year and a half ago. I finally, and this is shame on me, I finally got around to listening to Unstable from Tetrarch.
Okay, yeah.
What a kick-ass album that is.
Yeah, that's really good.
That's fucking Linkin Park should be paying them royalty for keeping their name alive. What a great record.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And they're fun to follow on social media because Diamond and Josh, you know, they've known each other since like middle school. So they always like, they tend to post like a goofy picture of them from middle school. And then them, you know, in front of a giant crowd opening for Seven Dust and
nice.
You know, like, look how far we've came type stuff. Yeah. Great band. Awesome. Great. Good times. Yeah.
Good listen, man. So that's my musical choice of the week has been Tetrarch, Unstable.
So What I've been watching this week, I watched Gremlins 2 with my kid, my youngest son. I just assumed over the years I'd seen it. So I was like, we watched Gremlins a bunch. You know, he's always like, hey, can we watch Gremlins? Sure. You know, can we watch Gremlins? Sure. And I was like, you know, there's a Gremlins 2. And he's like, I did not know that. You know, he's 8. And and so we put it on and I'm like, man, I have never seen this movie. And they break the fourth wall so much. I'm like trying to think about the time period. Like that was that revolutionary for the time period? Because they have, like Leonard Maltin, reviewing Gremlins as the Gremlins are, as the Gremlins are getting him. And they're kind of looking at the camera a lot, doing a lot of that, breaking the fourth wall stuff.
Sure.
And I mean, it was okay. Slayer on the, I picked out a few bands like Slayer's on the soundtrack and Faith No More's on the soundtrack. Nice. I'm like, all right, there we go. But, but I mean, obviously fun, silly watch.
Sure.
Did
your kid like it?
Oh, yeah. He loved it. But it's funny how you could tell the CGI they were attempting to do at the time, some of the stuff, like it was definitely early days of CGI they were attempting. You're like, all right, I give it to you, Gremlins. I'm sure when I was that age, if I would have seen it, when it came out, I'd have been like, oh my God, the graphics in this movie are insane.
Yep.
but watching it now, you're like, hey, good try. I could probably do that on my laptop. But
dude, isn't it crazy though? Like, I don't know if you've ever watched any of like the making of Star Wars type stuff where they literally put together models and push it, push and record 3 seconds and then back it up and push it again for three more seconds and then weave it together to be like 3 minutes or whatever.
Oh yeah.
So, it's crazy. And at the time we thought that was amazing. And honestly, Star Wars, 45 years old or whatever it is now. And it really doesn't look bad. I mean, when you watch Star Wars, the episode, whatever, I'm not a Star Wars guy. So the first one, when you watch that, you don't watch and go, oh man, this is shit.
Right.
I mean, there are shows that you watch from that era, like Space 1999 or Battlestar Galactica or whatever. You watch those and you're like, yeah, they had no money to do this. It's literally that somebody holding up a star thing and shaking it so it looks like it's moving.
Right.
But Star Wars looked pretty goddamn good. Even it holds up today.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Talking about falling down a rabbit hole on Pluto TV, they've got a Mystery Science Theater 3000 channel.
Oh, yeah.
You can just throw that one on and they're, watching all those movies that are just sure. absolutely terrible.
I like hearing that you're on Pluto TV. I love when anybody's using the Pluto because Pluto's awesome.
Yeah, I mean you get into it every once in a while. That's one that I'll throw on old Price is Right channel on that, and sit there and try to figure out how much all this stuff that you can buy at a yard sale for a dollar is back when it was like, here's a nice new bamboo dining set. Right.
And then you come out with the price. It's $3,000. You're like, get out of here. It's 30 bucks at the Goodwill.
On Facebook Marketplace, you can get that right now for $25.
It's more crazy when you see the little stuff, like when they're doing, they do the game where it's like, you have to guess a certain number and put the numbers in order or whatever, and you win a car.
Yeah.
And they'll have like toothpaste. Is it a 3, a 5, or a 9 that starts the price? And then they'll say 3, and I'll go, no, it's 9. It's like $9 toothpaste. Where the hell are you buying that shit at?
Right. the Rice-A-Roni.
Rice-A-Roni.
But yeah, some of that stuff, though, you do realize how much. There's like inflation on some things and then some things are still almost the same price.
Yeah.
It's like a box of macaroni and cheese is still, relatively cheap.
Whatever. Right. Yeah. It is funny. But then they sell these, some things are actually cheaper now when you think about it. Like whenever they had like these quote unquote exotic trips and they weren't really exotic. It's like, you're going to Mexico. It's like, okay, that's cool. And they would sell that shit as like, retail value $11,000. It's like you go to Mexico now for what? 1500 bucks on a boat.
The my favorite too is when they like a new car and then they'll go into it and they're like, it has floor mats and AM/FM radio. Like all of these. I love the AM/FM radio.
Right. Exactly. And you're right. And they would sell just the dumbest things on it. rear view mirrors on each side. It's like, wow, light bulbs.
Right. No, too funny, man. And then musically, Matt Hafey and I'm going to get his name wrong. Ishan. What's that?
I think it's Ihsan, I think.
Ihsan. Well, they put together like a black metal band called, and once again, I'm going to butcher this too, Ibaraki.
Maybe? Okay, I don't know. Sounds good.
But they released a new song, and it's got Gerard Way of My Chemical Romance on it. And Gerard does all the screaming, and it's okay. Like black metal screaming. And it's like, if you would have played me that and asked me 100 singers who's doing the screamy part, would never in a million years guess Gerard Way.
Nice.
And speaking, going back to our TikTok thing earlier, there's a really funny TikTok of like, dude, did you hear that Gerard Way guessed it on a song? And then they play it and they're like, that's Gerard Way. Like, but it's nice. It's cool to hear him kind of singing like that.
Sure.
Because it's definitely a black metal scream, and to just kind of show that he can do that. And it's just kind of cool to see him do something like that, to where it just kind of, you know, shows that he maybe doesn't take himself too seriously all the time.
Sure. How's the song in general? Is it a good song?
I liked it. Yeah. But I'm okay. Also a fan of the two out of three there. So
I love Trivium. So, yeah. You know, I'm all about Trivium, and the Crusade is like one of my like top 20 albums ever. So, you know, I'm a big Trivium fan. I don't know how did I not even know about this song? I don't know about this. Is it just a single, or is it like part of a release?
I believe it's just a single right now.
Okay. That's how I don't know.
But definitely, it was definitely in your email, if you get emails from all Amy. Amy and all those guys.
All right, I'll check it. I'll have to look and find. I must have just missed. It's probably billed as the name of the what they're calling the band instead of just, you know, Matt Hafey from Trivium. So I probably didn't know what it was.
Ronin, R-O-N-I-N, featuring Gerard Way. Yeah. Pretty cool little video too, but it's definitely a lot of fun.
I will check it out.
Awesome. Well, there's your homework for the week.
There we go. Get to work.
Yeah. Tomorrow I get to go finish up more of my my sleeve. Get a little tattoo appointment.
Oh, look at you. What are you getting?
I've kind of got like a little space thing going on the arm up here, so I just kind of need to fill it out. So, get some planets and stuff, man.
I got the Earth and Mars. Gonna get like a Venus.
Like, I got like Saturn right there. So, I got like this one that looks like Mars or something, but also kind of looks like a pepperoni on the back of my arm. So
nice.
Maybe get that work done.
Very cool.
Then got a
How long are you gonna be in the chair?
I'm locked out for 3 hours, so it'll probably be about two, I would assume. Oof. Because they're going to, you know, draw up whatever and then throw it on there.
Now, how do you come out of them? Are you the guy that has to immediately start drinking because your arm's fucking hurting? Or are you just like, whatever. No biggie.
I'm more of a, whatever.
Really? Okay.
Like, whatever. I mean, honestly, you know, like mainly just feels like a suntan.
Yeah. If it's done right. When I had my tat done on my arm, it was done by some fucking rube. And boy, I was dying at the end. I was in the chair. I wasn't even in the chair that long, maybe an hour. And it was like, I came out of that and was just like, oh my God, somebody just cut my arm off. Please.
No more arms.
Yeah. Nope.
Well, awesome, man. Well, that'll do it for another episode of Talk To Me here at knotfest.com. Once again, Isaac Lamb, huge thank you to him for coming on the show. And again, for the millionth time, check out the new EP, Lowest Form of Animal, April 1st. And so for the Talk To Me podcast, I'm Joshua Toomey.
I am Chris Hagan.
We will talk to you soon.
See ya.
The Talk To Me podcast, presented by knotfest.com. Follow the show at Talk To Me Talk. Be sure to subscribe, rate the podcast, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app to get the latest from the Talk To Me podcast.